This is the Arizona Republic on Sun Sounds of Arizona, Hour 2, for 11/25/2025. I'm your volunteer reader, Kim Chupa Cornell. Up first,
in obituaries, Charles Edward Hill, 91, Phoenix, Arizona.
Our beloved father, Charles Edward Hill, 91 of Phoenix, Arizona, passed away peacefully at his home, surrounded by his family, on November 13, 2025. Born on June 9, 1934, in Fort Scott, Kansas, to Charles Hardin and Catherine Lucille Allen Hill, he was a devoted husband to Joanne for 44 years, a loving father to Kathy Leonard, Jennifer Allison, and Stephen, and a proud papa to his one and only granddaughter, Amelia. Charles attended Humansville High School in Humansville, Missouri, followed by the University of Missouri, where he earned both a bachelor's and a master's of public administration. He served in the Army as a first lieutenant assigned to an artillery unit, then dedicated his career to public service, serving as the director of budget and research for the city of Phoenix for nearly 30 years. Charles's curiosity and sense of adventure led him to travel around the world with his beloved wife, Joanne, and he was passionate about hot air ballooning, serving a term as commander of the Arizona Balloon Club. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Hospice of the Valley, whose compassionate care provided comfort to Charles and his family during his final days.
In business, luxury sector likely to gain steam in 2026. From Reuters, consultancy price hikes leave shoppers betrayed. In Paris, the global luxury goods industry is likely to sell 3% to 5% more next year after stagnating in 2025, but years of aggressive price increases have alienated customers, threatening long-term growth, Bain & Company warned November 20th. Bain said next year's growth will be driven by continued momentum in the United States, resident local demand in Europe and Japan, and progressively improving trends in China. The consultancy, however, said persistent price hikes have pushed high-end fashion brands out of reach for aspirational buyers, while leaving even ultra-wealthy clients feeling betrayed, a strong reversal of the elevation strategy that dominated the industry in recent years. You cannot target only the top customers, because they are also starting to really be upset and to feel betrayed in this industry, said Bain partner Federica Lovato, citing price hikes at odds with a perceived lack of creativity. Some of the brands have realized they made mistakes, but some of the brands may have realized that they made mistakes, but most of them think they can fix the mistakes with the new creativity. So increasing the level of creativity at the same price that they have today, in our belief, won't be enough. The luxury customer base has shrunk to about 340 million people in 2025 from 400 million people in 2022, and looks set to lose 20 million to 30 million more clients, according to the study produced with Italian luxury industry group Altagamma. Even big spenders show signs of fatigue. While they now account for roughly 46 to 47% of the $412.4 billion personal luxury goods market, their spending has plateaued this year, the study found. The price push by most traditional luxury brands has created a complete void in the market for companies offering more affordable clothing, Lovato said. The strategy also priced out younger shoppers who, despite limited budgets, have outsized cultural influence and shape the spending decisions of older generations. This industry really walked away from Gen Z, Lovato said. Up next, Everyone's Looking for the Next Shoe to Drop, by Naomi Rovnik, Reuters. London. A big tech borrowing bonanza and signs of strain in private credit are spooking bond market lenders to the world's top-rated businesses in a trend that could jolt funding costs higher, hit corporate earnings, and add stress to twitchy global markets. a cross-market rout sparked by artificial intelligence over investment nerves and what delayed U.S. data might mean for monetary policy has pushed world stocks down 2.7% in November and knocked everything from cryptocurrency Bitcoin to gold. But investment-grade bonds, which still offer borrowers the cheapest funding cost seen in decades, have been spared. Investors at groups managing more than $10 trillion of client assets combined, however, expressed concerns about IG debt pricing or said they were reducing exposure to top-rated bonds, with some also having sold out of or begun actively betting against the asset class. After J.P. Morgan boss Jamie Dimon warned in October about cockroaches emerging in credit markets, tech giants began borrowing heavily to fund their rush to build AI data centers. Alternative asset manager Blue Owl sent waves of anxiety through the $3 trillion private credit market by moving to limit fund withdrawals, and IG debt was still not pricing enough risk, money managers said. "There's a fear in the markets and everyone's looking for the next shoe to drop," said Brian Kloss, portfolio manager at Brandywine Global in Philadelphia, a unit of Franklin Templeton, which runs $1.7 trillion of assets and has a cautious stance on credit. "That could well be IG debt," Kloss said, meaning he was taking profits on existing holdings. An ICE B of A index tracking of what top-rated U.S. companies pay is trading just 10 basis points above 27-year lows of 74 BPS touched in early October. The equivalent so-called spread in Europe is around 84, up slightly from 75 in late October. Solomon Ahmed, Global Head of Macro and Strategic Asset Allocation at Fidelity International, had a short position against IG debt because pricing was too rich and an economic downturn might bring a proper blowout. "Because prices had to fall," he added, "IG credit offered the most bang for buck in terms of hedging strategies that would pay out if a sustained economic downturn took hold. Credit spreads are a leading indicator for economic growth and stock market performance because funding costs affect businesses' profits, share prices, and expansion plans. There's a feedback loop," said John Stopford, head of multi-asset income at Asset Management 91, adding that he had dropped his fund's credit exposure to zero in recent weeks. "Interest rates on newly issued bonds would get more expensive," he said, "if cash drained out of private credit funds while an AI borrowing bonanza ramped up. If the cost of borrowing goes up in private credit, and there is lots of new issuance coming out, borrowers are going to have to pay up," he said. "And if it's more expensive for businesses to borrow, they are going to make less money." After $75 billion of U.S. investment-grade debt issued by AI-focused big tech hit the market in September and October, the cost of five-year credit default swaps insuring against tech group Oracle defaulting has risen 44% in a month to 87 BPS, data shows. Meanwhile, investors have begun moving away from private debt funds as their lending standards come under scrutiny from regulators. David Furry, State Street Investment Management head of fixed income portfolio strategy, said the world's fourth biggest asset manager was staying invested in corporate credit for now, but keeping a close eye for signs of economic weakness. IG credit pricing, he cautioned, had very little cushion baked in for economic deterioration. Jonathan Manning, credit portfolio manager at Europe's largest asset manager, Amundi, said he was also looking to lighten up a bit on IG credit because of high pricing and in case delayed data, such as closely watched job reports, increased volatility in a market that has traded calmly through sell-offs so far. Clients of Russell Investments, which advises institutions stewarding more than $90 billion between them, were also turning more cautious on IG credit. It's not so much that this is an asset class that they are the most worried about. It's the asset class that's got very expensive, so the upside isn't really there anymore, said Russell's global head of fixed income and FX solutions, Van Loo. Up next, long-term contracts chain Asia to coal. Power deals are a major obstacle to global efforts to curb climate change. By Sudarshan Varadhan, Reuters. Brazil. Decades-long coal-fired power purchase contracts are slowing the transition to cleaner energy sources in Asia, leading utilities to burn more coal even when wind and solar power are available, according to climate researchers and renewable energy advocates. Rising dependence on coal for power generation in countries such as Indonesia and Vietnam is a major obstacle to global efforts to combat climate change, exacerbated by stalled funding for renewable energy projects from rich countries. Southeast Asia has 50% to 100% of coal-fired power capacity locked in purchase agreements with about 9 to 18 years left on average, according to data from the Powering Past Coal Alliance, or PPCA, a coalition of governments, businesses, and other organizations pushing for coal use to be phased out. Buyers in other major Asian economies like China and India also hold substantial long-term purchase agreements for coal-fired electricity, leading to underutilization of wind and solar power in some cases, renewable experts say. Many of these contracts are often ill-suited to the demands of a modern renewable integrated grid, said Julia Skorupska, head of secretariat at the PPCA, told Reuters on the sidelines of the recent COP30 climate conference in Brazil. Southeast Asia's dependence on coal has grown to about 45% of annual power generation, from 35% over the past decade, even as the global share has slipped to around 34% to 39%, data from energy think tank Ember showed. Clean energy adoption in the region has also lagged global averages, amounting to 26% of annual electricity output, compared with 41% globally, the data showed. Long-term fossil fuel contracts guarantee steady income for coal plant owners and stable jobs for employees, making early retirement politically and economically unattractive, industry officials say. When the power grids break their coal purchase agreements, they expose themselves to financial penalties that vary depending on the nature of the contract and the size of shortfalls. Even in China, where carbon dioxide emissions are on track to fall this year, extending an 18-month streak of flat or falling emissions due mainly to increased clean power generation, demand for coal remains high. Output from its coal and gas-fired power plants rose 7.3% annually in October, government data showed. The concern is that we're seeing a repeat of what happened at the end of last year when grid operators had contracted too much coal power under long-term contracts and decided to curtail solar and wind, said Lori Maivirtra, head analyst of the Helsinki-based Center for Research on Energy and Clean Air. Up next, in sports. Lovable losers. Cards keep finding ways to lose, and it's laughable. Leave it to those lovable losers, the Arizona Cardinals, to find yet another way to fritter away a game. Last week, it was penalties, a franchise record, 17 of them, that spelled their doom during a 41-22 loss to the San Francisco 49ers. This time it was pure ineptitude during a 27-24 overtime loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars on Sunday, November 23rd at State Farm Stadium. The Cardinals found a way to lose despite winning the turnover battle 4-0, becoming the first team to do that since at least 2021. During that span, teams forced four or more turnovers in a game 50 other times. Each time, those teams won. Then there are the Cardinals, who are 3-8 and have lost 8 of their last 9 games. It should never have ended the way it did, with the Jaguars eventually winning on a Cam Little field goal to open the overtime period, not when the Cardinals' defense supplied the necessary fire and fury all afternoon, making at least 5 exceptional plays that stood out above all others. "It's kind of hard because we've been dealing with this type of thing the past couple weeks," said safety Jalen Thompson when asked how he wraps his head around the latest loss. "Our mindset has to be just go back in the building and work hard the next day, clean up those mistakes we made. But I also want to give ourselves some grace as well. We had a lot of good plays defensively, and we've been improving. We've got more room to grow, but it's a good start, I feel like." With just 6 games remaining, it's too late to be a good start. A good finish would be better, but can anyone really expect the Cardinals to do that? They have to win out to achieve a winning season at 9-8, and that's not going to happen. There were, however, some encouraging signs against the Jaguars, 7-4. Thompson got it started with a strip sack of quarterback Trevor Lawrence in the first quarter, knocking the ball out of his hand and forcing a fumble. Rookie defensive lineman Walter Nolan III pounced on it and rolled it into the end zone for a defensive touchdown. "Oh my gosh, I was happy as hell seeing that," Thompson said. "We needed that one." Early in the second quarter, teammate Budda Baker rushed Lawrence on a safety blitz and brought him down for a 6-yard loss on third down. It forced the Jaguars to settle for a field goal, but the Cardinals scored a touchdown on the ensuing possession for a 14-10 lead. A third-quarter interception in the end zone by defensive back Garrett Williams prevented a Jacksonville touchdown, but it didn't lead to any points for Arizona, ditto with a pick later in the quarter by linebacker Akeem Davis-Gaither. Baker's fourth-quarter interception for the fourth forced turnover, his first pick since getting 2 in 2022, led to a 39-touchdown pass from Jacoby Brissett to Greg Dortch and a 21-17 lead. And yet still, it wasn't enough. "Yeah," Baker said afterwards, "it was a hard-fought game. We got some turnovers trying to give the ball to our offense, but yeah, we've just got to be cleaner, be more in the details, and execute our game plans." Cardinals coach Jonathan Gannon summed it up succinctly when he said this: "When you win the takeaway battle 4-0, you should have a really good chance of winning," he said. This one falls on the offense, for only converting 2 of the turnovers into touchdowns. Brissett, who left the game for a short spell after taking a hard hit and banging his head, did the best he could. Pass catchers Michael Wilson, 10 receptions, 118 yards, and Trey McBride, 9 catches, 79 yards, played exceptionally for the second week in a row. But the Cardinals allowed 6 sacks, and the run game finished with a paltry 55 yards. Despite another loss, it's almost astonishing that the locker room hasn't become fractured. Thompson and others have repeatedly said there have been no finger-pointing, no casting blame from within. Maybe there should be. Blowing their stack, calling each other out, and refusing to accept losing might be the one thing that pulls this team out of its miserable funk. "I'm a sore loser, Baker," the 9-year veteran said. "We could play rock, paper, scissors right now, and I'd be mad if you beat me. I don't like to lose. But at the end of the day, we've just got to continue to trust in the work, continue to grind, take it one day at a time, and execute as a team. Execute as ourselves, and those games will come." Thompson called the loss a good building block to work on, saying he felt the Cardinals were coming off their best week of practice all season, and adding, "If we keep working, we're going to be good down the line. Maybe next year. All I know, it's time to start looking ahead, like toward the 2026 NFL draft. Hey, the Cardinals could end up with a top 5 pick." Bob McMahon, columnist, Arizona Republic. Next, in high school football, 4A Arizona High School Football Semifinal Preview Picks, Chris Coppola. The Arizona High School Football Playoffs continue on November 28th through 29th with semifinal playoff games. The Arizona Republic this week will preview the games with predictions for each. Here is a look at the 4A conference semifinal games on Friday, November 28th. Both start at 7 p.m. at the Higher Seeds Field. The winner will face off in the championship game at 3 p.m. December 5th at Mountain America Stadium in Tempe. Number 12 ALA West Foothills versus number 1 Arcadia. These teams met in the regular season, a 20-0 Arcadia win on September 27th. But the Guardians have won 3 straight playoff games against higher seed teams, including the November 21st win over number 4 Mojave, 28-18. They look like one of those teams that is hot at the right time after going 7-4 in the regular season. Kenyon Rosenthal leads the team's effective rushing attack, going for nearly 2,000 yards this season. He ran for 222 yards and 3 touchdowns against Mojave. Arcadia hasn't lost all season and cemented the number 1 seed with its win over Snowflake in the season finale. They have rolled in the playoffs, led by quarterback Zach Smith, nearly 2,500 passing yards this season. Running back Ryan Jimenez, 128 yards, 1 touchdown in November 21st playoff win over Marcos Denisa, and receiver Ian Slater, 186 yards, 4 touchdowns versus Marcos. We think the Titans will prove too much for the Guardians again in this one. Prediction, Arcadia. Number 7, Micah Mountain at number 6, Gila Ridge. These teams did not meet in the regular season. Gila Ridge has gone undefeated since its opening day loss to Lake Havasu. The Hawks shut out Coconino 27-0 in last week's quarterfinal. Running back Prentice Box III was fourth in 4A rushing with more than 1,600 yards on the season, and quarterback Isaac Solis was sixth in the conference in passing, nearly 2,300 yards. Micah Mountain, 10-2, including playoffs, pulled off one of last week's stunners, knocking off number 2 Snowflake 21-14. Their only losses came in September, and they've looked strong in the latter part of the season, with a defense that hasn't allowed more than 14 points from an opponent from October on. This game has all the markings of a tight thriller that could go either way. Prediction, Gila Ridge. You're listening to the Arizona Republic, Hour 2, on Sun Sounds of Arizona for Tuesday, November 25th. Up next, in basketball, Red Hot Suns top Spurs for third win in a row, by Dwayne Rankin. The Phoenix Suns are all about winning the possession game. They did so at a season-high level in defeating the San Antonio Spurs 111-102 on Sunday, November 23rd, before a sellout crowd of 17,071 at Mortgage Matchup Center. Phoenix, 11-6, hoisted 20 more shots, 97-77, in winning a third straight game and improving 2-0 against the Spurs, 11-5, this season. Suns forward Dylan Brooks scored a team-high 25 points, while Spurs point guard De'Aaron Fox delivered a game-high 26 points. Phoenix is now 10-2 in its last 12 games, and surprisingly, 6th in the West. Only 3 NBA teams have a better record than the Suns since October 31st. The Detroit Pistons, 14-2, are on a 12-game winning streak, while defending NBA champion Oklahoma City Thunder and the Toronto Raptors are 11-1 since the final day of last month. The win was the first back-to-back home games for the Suns, with the Houston Rockets next on Monday, November 24th. Kevin Durant, who was traded to Houston from Phoenix last season, was ruled out of the game at Phoenix and at Golden State, another one of his former teams, due to personal reasons. Here are takeaways from Sunday's win over the Spurs. Winning with Booker struggling. Devin Booker isn't happy with how he's played in the last 2 games, but he'll take winning as a consolation prize any day. The Suns stole one Friday over Minnesota, 114-113, with Booker committing a season-high 9 turnovers and topped the Suns despite his 7 of 18 effort from the field. I don't like my last two games at all. But we won, Booker said. Booker has experienced cold shooting streaks before and always warmed back up. He went through stretches of being careless with the ball, but Booker rarely has had issues with both at the same time. However, the fact that the Suns won both games with him playing below his standards is a testament to Phoenix winning games with defense. They limited San Antonio to 41.6% shooting, going 10 of 34 from 3, and forced 19 turnovers. Phoenix only scored 14 points off of those turnovers, but winning the turnover battle is a huge reason why they won the possession game by a lopsided margin. Phoenix wants to do more than make teams feel its defense presence. They are determined to deliver a bump and reach for the ball even if the opponent has clear possession. That can be annoying, but what the Suns really are doing is taking teams out of their comfort zone. Phoenix isn't just allowing a team to run its offense without resistance. The Suns still yield drives to the rim and offensive rebounds. They are 15th in the NBA in points in the paint allowed at 50.5 a game, and 23rd in offensive rebounds allowed at 12.4. However, Phoenix can buckle down defensively and create separation. The Suns limited the Spurs to 33.3% shooting in outscoring the Spurs 37-24 in the third quarter to take an 86-80 average. Goodwin has hunger for basketball. Jordan Goodwin made the most of his first start for the Suns Sunday. That goes back to when he played for them in the 2023-24 season. He posted his fifth career double-double with 15 points and 10 rebounds. Goodwin snatched 4 offensive rebounds to match 7-footer Mark Williams. Goodwin stands just 6'3", but this is what he does. His career for offensive rebounds is 8 while playing for the Los Angeles Lakers 2 seasons ago. Booker said he and Brooks have tried to figure out how Goodwin works the offensive boards so well, but have come up empty-handed for an explanation. Suns coach Jordan Ott said Goodwin just has a hunger for the basketball. He's usually good in position to get an offensive rebound without having to shove or push a player. Then Goodwin just scores easily, even against bigger defenders in the area. A definite super skill, as Ott calls it, and fits into the Suns looking to win the possession game. Coming out of training, Goodwin appeared to be in a battle for a roster spot with Jared Butler, who was on a training camp contract. Butler got buckets, but Goodwin scored and also brought hustle plays, rebounding, steals, and defensive intensity. The Suns still have a roster spot left. They chose to keep Goodwin and waive Butler. That decision is looking like the right one. Brooks versus Udoka. The excitement surrounding Monday's game wasn't going to be the same without Durant. Phoenix's next two games against the Rockets are in Houston, and the last one in Phoenix is in April. But Houston may rest him for that final one ahead of the playoffs. There's still some intrigue heading into the first meeting with Houston. The Suns will have their hands full trying to handle Rockets' all-star forward, especially if Mark Williams sits out the second of the back-to-back as he has earlier this season. Houston is the first in the NBA in offensive rebounds at 16.5 a game. Steven Adams is accounting for 5.2 of those boards to lead the NBA in offensive rebounds per game. That's a very important component to this game, but all eyes will likely be on Dylan Brooks and how he plays against his former teams. Brooks was part of the Durant trade along with Jalen Green and the 10th overall pick in the 2025 draft, 7-footer Kaman Malak. Green remains out with a right hamstring strain that will be re-evaluated next month. Malak may play if Williams sits, as the Suns have been rolling with 3 bigs. One thing is certain, Brooks will bring extra. Next, horoscopes. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. Professional power struggles can rock your boat today. Caught in a mental loop, process your deeper feelings before acting. Gemini, May 21 through June 21. Future feeling intense? The Aquarius moon can bring up complex feelings about where you're headed in life. Talk it out. Cancer, June 22nd through July 22nd. Deep emotions can grip you first thing today. Tempted to hide away and not deal with the world? Leo, July 23rd through August 22. Partnerships bring intense encounters today. Truths may come out. Brace yourself for emotional honesty. Virgo, August 23rd through September 22nd. Not feeling like your best self? Your energy levels may feel a little off. Libra, September 23rd through October 23rd. Obsessive passions rock your world today. Caught up in the intensity of a creative project or love affair? Scorpio, October 24 through November 21. Be strong in the face of home or family situation. The Aquarius moon tests your ability to stay centered. Sagittarius, mentally preoccupied? Once you get your mind on something, it may be hard to let it go today. Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st. Mentally preoccupied? Once you get your mind on something, it may be hard to let it go today. Capricorn, December 22nd through January 19. Feeling heavy around money? A financial issue may consume you. Don't go to the dark side. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. Do you know how powerful you are? Today's Aquarius moon will reveal whether you believe it or not. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. Emotions may feel unsettled. Can't quite put your finger on it? Try redirecting your energy into one of your goals. Up next, Dear Abby by Abigail Van Buren. Message about new husband arrives to wife anonymously. Dear Abby, I've been married to my husband for 2 months. I haven't told anyone I'm married except my close friends and family. Someone recently messaged me about my husband, stating that he has Asperger's. They know my name and have my phone number. I don't know who this person is or why they would tell me this now. I already suspected my husband has Asperger's, so I'm not shocked. But this is eating me up inside. I can't sleep. I can't think. I recently lost my mom to cancer. Now I'm facing this. I previously dated a narcissist who used to lie regularly. But after all that heartbreak and torment, I'm now with somebody who lies to me again. I'm so confused and upset. I really do want to ask my husband to get assessed. I don't think I can trust him anymore. Do you have advice for me? Losing again in Canada. Dear Losing, let me point out that individuals who write anonymous letters usually are not trying to be helpful and instead may be trying to cause trouble in your marriage. Before asking your husband to be assessed for Asperger's, go online and read as much information about it as you can. You might also consider contacting the Association for Autism and Neurodiversity. If what you learn from reliable resources indicate that it could be something your husband is experiencing, then by all means suggest he be assessed. He may not necessarily be lying to you as much as being in denial. Dear Abby, my best friend and coworker is 57. I'm 32. Her husband died 2 years ago, leaving her and her 22-year-old son alone. We've been best friends and coworkers for the last 6 years. But over the last few months, I've been realizing she's a lot more than just a friend. I am nervous about trying to make advances because I don't know if the feelings are mutual or how she views our age difference. I don't want to risk ruining our friendship. I just know my heart skips a beat when our eyes meet or our fingers touch accidentally. I've realized these last few months that I'm falling hard for her and I am afraid to let her know. If I don't, however, my feelings are going to eat me alive. What should I do? Falling for her in Kansas. Dear Falling, ask your best friend and coworker to join you for a casual lunch or dinner. Keep it light, but tell her how much you enjoy her company and ask if the age difference between you bothers her. If the answer is no, explain that you care for her very much and wonder if she's open to the idea of dating you. If she says yes, and there are rules at your job that discourage fraternizing, you may have to find another place to work. If she responds that dating would be awkward, let her know you will always be her friend because you think she is special.
Up next, comics. Blondie by Dean Young and John Marshall. Blondie and Dagwood talking. Are you ready to take Thanksgiving to another level? What could you possibly do to top yourself? Only you could dream up a drumstick mistletoe. I'm trying to stay humble. Beetle Bailey by Greg, Brian, and Neil Walker. Sergeant and nurse talking. Put on the gown, the doctor will be in soon. Hey, Sarge, where's my scale? Family Circus by Bill and Jeff Keane. Dolly reading The Old Woman in the Shoe to the baby. When it got cold, they moved to their winter home, a fuzzy slipper. Peanuts, Lucy and Charlie Brown talking. You never have any self-doubts, do you? Me? Ha ha ha. No, I guess not. Baby Blues, Rick Kirkman and Jerry Scott. Woman and girl talking. Aunt Rhonda, you can sleep in my bed and I'll sleep down here. Aw, that's very sweet of you, Zoe. Thanks. We can discuss the financial arrangements later. Pickles, man talking to younger boy. What are you doing, Nelson? Holding my thought. I was trying to tell Grandma something while she's on the phone, and she told me to hold my thought until she was done. But I don't think I can hold it that long. Next. Want to cut your own Christmas tree in Arizona? Here's how, by Tiffany Acosta. For many families, cutting down the Christmas tree is as much a holiday ritual as baking cookies or hanging stockings. And believe it or not, you don't have to live in a snowy state to make that tradition happen. In Arizona, you can cut down your own Christmas tree thanks to special permits issued by the U.S. Forest Service. Families can head to spots like Coconino, Prescott, and Kaibab National Forests. The process is simple, and it helps overgrown forest areas, which is a plus for the environment. There are a few regulations, such as tree cutting is prohibited at trailheads and in campgrounds. Make sure you stay within the designated cutting areas specified on your permit and map. Here's how and where you can cut your own Christmas tree in Arizona. Can I cut down my own Christmas tree in Arizona? Yes, it's legal to cut down Christmas trees in Arizona with a Forest Service permit. How much does it cost to get a permit? A permit to cut a Christmas tree in an Arizona National Forest costs $15. Where can I cut down my own Christmas tree in Arizona? You can purchase a permit to cut down a Christmas tree in designated areas of all six Arizona National Forests: Apache, Sitgreaves, Coconino, Coronado, Kaibab, Prescott, and Tonto. Your permit will be for a specific location in the forest you choose. Your Christmas tree permit also allows you to collect an armload of green branches and some pine cones for decoration. Permit sales are final and no refunds are available if you are unable to use your permit. Do you need a permit to cut down a tree in Arizona? Yes, you need a permit in Arizona to cut down Christmas trees. Permits are available online or in person. You can go online to recreation.gov. All the forests in Arizona are available there, or you can go into a ranger station or the supervisor's office in the valley, which is on 24th Street and McDowell, and get a permit over the counter. Each Christmas tree permit allows the cutting of one tree, which must not exceed 10 feet in height or 6 inches in diameter at the stump. Attach the permit to the tree immediately after cutting and ensure it is visible during transport. Cutting dates for 2025 begin on November 14th and end at midnight December 31st. How can you keep a Christmas tree alive longer? To keep your Christmas tree alive and fresh throughout the holiday season, follow these tips. Choose a fresh tree. Look for a tree with vibrant green needles that don't easily fall off when you run your hand along the branches. Make a fresh cut. Trim about an inch off the bottom of the trunk before placing it in water. This helps the tree absorb water more effectively. Use a proper stand. Ensure your tree stand holds enough water, at least 1 quart per inch of trunk diameter, and is stable. Water daily. Check the water level daily and refill as needed to keep the base submerged. A tree can absorb a lot of water, especially in the first week. Keep away from heat sources. Position the tree away from heat vents and direct sunlight, which can dry it out more quickly. Maximize humidity. If possible, increase humidity around the tree by using a humidifier or placing a shallow pan of water nearby. Avoid additives. Stick to plain water. Commercial additives or home remedies like sugar or aspirin may not be effective and can harm the tree. Next, here's when you should have your holiday gifts mailed by Paige Moore. The holidays can be a stressful time. From Christmas shopping to holiday cooking, there's a lot to do. However, in order to ensure your Christmas presents reach their destination before the holiday, you must know the shipping deadlines for your chosen postal service. Every postal service has different shipping deadlines for each mail class, so it's best to know the deadlines before procrastinating in your Christmas shopping. It's a good rule of thumb to ship gifts earlier rather than later, but if you're running behind, there is an increased risk of your item not arriving before Christmas Day, or there could be additional fees for expedited shipping. Here are the deadlines you should know before mailing off packages this holiday season. USPS shipping deadlines for Christmas 2025. For an expected delivery date before December 25th, Arizonans using the U.S. Postal Service should send items by the following dates. USPS Ground Advantage Service, December 17. First Class Mail Service, December 17. Priority Mail Service, December 18. Priority Mail Express Service, December 20th. People who are sending mail abroad can find the full list of deadlines for each country at USPS.com. FedEx shipping deadlines for Christmas 2025. For an expected delivery date before December 25th, Arizonans using FedEx should send items by the following dates. FedEx same-day delivery, December 23rd. FedEx first overnight, FedEx priority overnight, FedEx standard overnight, extra hours, December 23rd. FedEx 2-day and FedEx 2-day AM, December 22nd. FedEx Express Saver, December 20th. FedEx Ground, one-day shipping, December 23rd. FedEx Delivery, one-day shipping, December 23rd. FedEx Ground Economy, December 13th. People who are sending mail abroad can find the full list of deadlines for each country at FedEx.com. UPS shipping deadlines for Christmas 2025. For an expected delivery date before December 25th, Arizonans using UPS should send items by the following dates. UPS 3-day select, December 19th. UPS 2-day air, December 22nd. UPS next day air, December 23rd. And people who are sending mail abroad can find the full list of deadlines for each country at UPS.com. You're listening to the Arizona Republic on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I am your volunteer reader, Kim Chupa Cornell. In extra news, social media policy. Senators call for probe of scam ads on Meta sites by Jeff Horowitz. Senators Josh Hawley and Richard Blumenthal have asked the heads of Federal Trade Commission and the Securities Exchange Commission to probe Meta platforms following a Reuters report about the social media giant's revenue from ads on Facebook and Instagram that promote scams and banned goods. The FTC and SEC should immediately open investigations and, if the reporting is accurate, pursue vigorous enforcement action where appropriate to force Meta to disgorge profits, pay penalties, and agree to cease running such advertisements, Hawley and Blumenthal wrote in a letter to the federal agencies. Earlier this month, Reuters reported that internal documents from late 2024 showed about $16 billion in revenue from illicit advertising. One document noted Meta earns $3.5 billion in revenue from higher-risk scam ads every 6 months. Other documents show Meta's anti-fraud rules didn't appear to apply to many ads that regulators and the company's own staff believed violated the spirit of its rules against scam advertising. In response to the Reuters report, Meta said it had reduced user reports of scams by 58% over the last 18 months. The Holly Blumenthal letter makes claims that are exaggerated and wrong, Meta spokesperson Andy Stone said. We aggressively fight fraud and scams because people on our platforms don't want this content. Legitimate advertisers don't want it, and we don't want it either. Holly, a Republican from Missouri, and Blumenthal, a Democrat from Connecticut, expressed skepticism about Meta's efforts to combat illicit advertising. They pointed to the company's ad library, a publicly accessible database of advertising that appears on Meta's social media platforms. Even a short review of Meta's ad library at the time of this letter shows clearly identifiable advertisements for illicit gambling, payment scams, crypto scams, AI deepfake sex services, and fake offers of federal benefits, they wrote. The senators cited Reuters' report that Meta itself estimates its platforms were involved in a third of all scams in the United States and went on to note that the FTC estimates Americans lost $158.3 billion to scams last year. This would suggest Meta was responsible for more than $50 billion in consumer loss, they wrote. Their letter alleges that Meta has consciously chosen to accept ads that promote fraudulent activities. Scams have been allowed to take over Facebook and Instagram as Meta has drastically cut its safety staff, including for FTC-mandated reviews, even as it dumps unimaginable sums into its generative AI projects. Blumenthal and Holly expressed particular concern about fake ads purporting to represent the U.S. government or political figures. They cited an example of a bogus ad that claimed President Donald Trump was offering $1,000 to recipients of food assistance. While Meta has been warned about advertisement deepfakes impersonating politicians, it still continues to run fraudulent clips, their letter states. The beneficiaries of these scams are often cybercrime groups based in China, Sri Lanka, Vietnam, and the Philippines. Up next, more Americans delay or drop their health insurance. Buyers losing consumer protections, facing up to double in premiums. By Amina Nayasi, Reuters. Officials from several states say Americans relying on subsidies to afford health insurance are holding off on enrolling as they face 2026 premium hikes that could more than double, with one state seeing enrollment drag by as much as 33%. Of more than a dozen states that directly sell to their residents, plans established under the Affordable Care Act, seven including California and Maryland, told Reuters signups are lagging compared to a year ago. There is still time for enrollment to pick up, some said, with the next few weeks seen as critical. A December vote in the U.S. Senate could still be an 11th-hour rescue for the program's subsidies. Other major changes would be difficult to implement for the next year, experts say. Big wins by Democrats in November have put healthcare back in the forefront of U.S. politics and left Republicans scrambling to address the issue before next year's midterm elections that will decide the control of Congress. President Donald Trump has said he supported giving funds directly to consumers, evading health insurance companies, but may be mulling alternatives. Politico reported on November 24th that Trump was considering a two-year extension of the subsidies. People are making really tough choices to figure out how they can stay covered or making the tough choice to drop, said Ingrid Ulry, chief executive officer for Washington Health Benefit Exchange. Ulry said 7,000 people in Washington state have dropped coverage since the start of the sign-up period, a 21% year-over-year increase in disenrollments. The Department of Health and Human Services did not respond to a request for comment. Some consumers are paring back to alternatives like short-term coverage plans that were designed to be used for emergency health care or by signing up for co-funded health-sharing arrangements managed by faith-based groups, some officials and brokers said. A spokesperson for Covered California said enrollment is down 33% from the sign-up period last year. Pennsylvania said it had seen a 12% decrease in new enrollees from 2025 to 2026, and for every one new enrollment, two existing enrollees have terminated coverage. Virginia, Maryland, Rhode Island, and Connecticut all described a weaker pace of sign-up. About 24 million people signed up for the plans in 2025, with about 22 million receiving income-based subsidies, enhanced tax credit for households making above 400% of the federal poverty level were introduced in 2021 during the COVID-19 pandemic and are set to expire at the end of 2025. Health research firm KFF estimates the premiums will more than double, particularly for those people at the top of the scale. Ulrey said Washington's active enrollment drops were largely made up of families earning an average of $107,000 each year. The plans aim to increase access to health care in the United States by drawing insurers into a stable market. Insurers who offer the plan had already been expecting a difficult 2026 due to rising medical costs and shrinking enrollment. CVS Health's Aetna announced in May it would exit the business entirely. United Healthcare said it would trim its ACA offerings in less favorable markets, while Centene and Cigna have signaled potential rate adjustments tied to the expiration of the subsidies. Lindsay Lang, director at HealthSource RI, said an increased number of residents have canceled appointments with state employees who help shoppers navigate the marketplace. If there's going to be a vote in Congress, it would occur in December, and that's truly the 11th hour, Lang said. If lawmakers directly extend subsidies at the current amount, implementing that retroactively would be manageable for states, two officials and three industry experts said. That is relatively simple for us to do in our system, said Rhode Island's Lang. Michelle Eberle, executive director at Maryland Health Benefit Exchange, said rolling out Republican suggestions of direct subsidies and other changes to the framework of the tax credit would require documentation, new technology, and system testing that could not be carried out in time for next year. I don't think any exchange, including the federal exchange, can make systematic changes that quickly, Eberle said. Whitney Steidem, an executive with health insurance marketplace eHealth, said short-term and indemnity plans that reimburse buyers a fixed amount are often the next option for people willing to forgo comprehensive health coverage, but they don't cover pre-existing conditions. People shopping for cheaper plans may not know that short-term coverage or health ministry plans often do not pay for essential health benefits, such as maternity care, mental health services, or preventative care, said Michelle Long, senior policy manager at KFF. It's not health insurance, she said. In baseball, Ohtani set to play for Japan again in WBC. Shohei Ohtani, a two-time World Series champion, will attempt to add a second World Baseball Classic title to his haul when he competes for the defending champion Japanese team again next year. The 31-year-old two-way superstar made the announcement Monday on social media that he would again participate in the international tournament. Ohtani is fresh off another spectacular season with the Los Angeles Dodgers. He was the unanimous selection as the National League's most valuable player after going 1-1 with a 2.87 ERA in 14 pitching starts while leading the league at the plate with a .622 slugging percentage, a 1.014 on-base plus slugging percentage, and a career-high 146 runs scored. In 158 regular season games this year, Ohtani battled .282 with 55 home runs and 102 RBIs en route to his fourth career MVP honor. Then Ohtani helped the Dodgers complete a run to their second straight World Series championship. He hit .265 with 8 homers and 14 RBIs in 17 playoff games while going 2-1 with a 4.43 ERA in 4 starts on the mound. It is unclear if Ohtani will both hit and pitch for the Japanese team, as he only returned to the mound in June after recovering from elbow surgery. Yankee owner hints at lower payroll in 26. The New York Yankees last won the World Series 16 years ago, and while owner Hal Steinbrenner maintains his club is still championship robust, he would not mind spending a little less money on payroll next year. Steinbrenner fielded questions from reporters during a video conference call Monday and bristled at the assumption that the Yankees, Major League Baseball's most valuable club, are turning an annual profit. "I don't want to get into it, but that's not a fair statement or an accurate statement," Steinbrenner said. "Everybody wants to talk about revenues. They need to talk about our expenses, including the $100 million expense to the city of New York that we have to pay every February 1st, including the COVID year. It all starts to add up in a hurry. Nobody spends more money, I don't believe, on player development, scouting, performance science. These all start to add up. If you want to go to look at the revenues, you've got to somehow figure out the expense side as well. You might be surprised," Steinbrenner said. Steinbrenner said that the Yankees player payroll landed at $319 million for 2025. That got them a playoff berth and a loss to the division rival Toronto Blue Jays in the American League Division Series. You've been listening to the Arizona Republic on Sun Sounds of Arizona for Tuesday, November 25th, 2025. I'm your volunteer reader, Kim Chupa Cornell. Join us next time for an upcoming edition of the Arizona Republic. Music is News, News, News by Postador de Musicas.